Hello, everybody, and welcome to Patriotic Weekly Review, episode number 86. Now, I hope you all had an absolutely wonderful Christmas. I hope you all broke lockdown. I hope you all spent it with your family, your friends, your loved ones. I hope everyone came round. I hope you carved turkey together, and I hope you gave the middle finger to the establishment. That is something we should all have done. And I said this on Christmas Day in my Christmas Day address, that it wasn't just Christmas Day. It was the first time in many people's lives where they openly disobeyed the government, where they were willing to break the law, where they essentially committed to taking part in a revolutionary act of defiance against the state. It was big. It was very important. And I hope you had a lovely time. I almost did an entire stream just about Christmas, actually, because I did have a really, really good Christmas. It was Sophia's first Christmas where she actually knew it was Christmas. So it was particularly magical for me. But I'm not going to spend the entire stream talking about that, even though I could. It was a very good time for myself, and I hope you had a good time as well. I hope that you're all feeling refreshed, and we do have a lot more to come, both tonight and in the next few days. So we are live now on DLive and also on RadioAlbion.com. Now, on Radio Albion, apparently only the audio player is working tonight. So if you are going over to Radio Albion to watch it, it's only available on audio. They're having a few technical problems. There always seems to be a technical problem, whether it's BitChute or whether it's something else. That's just the nature of this. Unfortunately, not perfect, but it is on audio over at RadioAlbion.com. The replay of this, along with the replay of all my videos and all my other material, will be over on BitChute. So please make sure you have me there. Make sure you're subscribed to me over on BitChute. That is very, very important. Now, if you want to contribute to the show, that would be absolutely wonderful. Obviously, your generous donations are what keeps my head above water. It's what keeps me doing shows like this, allows me to work full time for this movement. And the best way to do that is through Entropy. I've just popped the Entropy link in the live chat now. That's the Entropy link. It is also up on my Telegram. Now, if you go over to Entropy, you can ask questions. You can ask questions to myself, to any member of the panel. And if you pay for a question, if you send a super chat, that will be asked live on air to the relevant member of the panel or to the panel as a whole. If it's a question, it's a comment, it will be read out. You can also ask non-paid questions to the panel. That is something that is also done through Entropy, and the best questions are voted up and the less good questions are voted down, and the good questions get asked every week to the panel. You can also donate to me via Bitcoin. My Bitcoin can be found over on my BitChute, or you can email me about that. And my email address is mark@thefallofwesternman.com. And if you email me, you can also ask for alternative ways of donating, including bank transfer. Now, I haven't been answering my emails over the last few days. I think the last time I answered my emails was Christmas Eve. I did a Christmas Eve email session, but I haven't done anything since then. And that's because it's Christmas. It's because I've been having a little bit of downtime with the family. I've had a bit of time off. I've still been doing a lot of streaming. I did an excellent stream with Jody K last night. We've got, obviously, tonight. I'm also on with James Goddard. James Goddard's year 2020 in review will be on directly after this. I will be appearing with James for that. So please make sure you hop on over there after this show, and we'll make sure the link is in the chat. But I've been doing lots of streaming, but I haven't been at my desk. I've not been replying to emails. So if you have sent me anything, please just be a little bit patient. And as soon as we are into the first Monday of the new year, I will be back onto emails and I'll catch up with any backlog. So please, as I say, be patient. Now, obviously, we have a number of shows coming up between now and when everyone goes back to work on Monday in the new year. We have a New Year special, which will be on this channel and also on YouTube. And that'll be hosted by myself and Laura Towler. That will be a patriotic alternative New Year's Day special, 7 p.m. UK time to 9 p.m. UK time. And that will be with a range of different PA-friendly content creators. I think there'll be about half a dozen to a dozen people appearing, giving a bit of a year in review, talking about what they hope for 2021. That'll be quite entertaining, so please join us then. We also will be doing some gaming on Sunday night. I will be live with two of my friends, one of them being the amazingly talented Patriot. If you aren't following the Patriot, he is an artist, he is a nationalist, he produces all kinds of drawings, animations, and artwork for the nationalist cause. For he works with Radio Albion, producing artwork for them. And he is a very, very talented artist, and he hopes to work more within the movement, producing art for people who are making records, people recording music, people making videos. He is a really, really good guy. I've known him for years. We're going to be doing a bit of gaming, and I'll be introducing him to the community on Sunday night. So that's another two shows to look out for. And myself and Laura will be rolling out our new schedule in the new year, which will be an addition to PWR and my regular shows. So please make sure you keep up with me on Telegram, and I will make sure that I keep you informed of when things are happening. Now, Jason, how was your Christmas, my friend? Are you feeling suitably refreshed? Did you break the lockdown? Did you carve a turkey? Or did you hide inside alone, fearing an untimely death from the coronavirus?
We definitely broke any lockdown restrictions. You're absolutely right. People are breaking these restrictions, and for many of them, the very first time in their life to do anything greater than maybe speed or turn on a red when they're not allowed. But it's been a fantastic week. A lot going on, like yourself, and making great strides in service to white well-being. Got a wonderful tap coming up later in the week, and we'll let you all know more about that as soon as I know more about that. And I want to mention one of our, as we are wont to do now, one of our great participants in service to white well-being, and that is Slots. And you can find him on Twitter at @RealSlots, SLAUGHTZ. And I will share his link over the course of the stream. It is magnificent to be with Endeavor again, and of course our great leader, the one and only Mark Collett, looking healthy as ever and proud to be here. Pass it back.
Thank you, my friend. Well, I am feeling healthy. I'm feeling rejuvenated. And I've got to say, things are obviously a little bit different. I'm not on Twitter anymore, and I'd really like it if you could tweet out that this show is live. If you can give this a little plug if you haven't already, that would be a great help. I do rely on the grace of the community for that, because I'm only on Telegram, Parler, and Gab now. So if you can do that, that would be a great help. We've had some snow here over the last couple of days. It was Sophia's first time in the snow. I went for a lovely walk the other day down to the duck ponds with her. So I am feeling fully refreshed and ready to go. And what a great guest we have tonight. Endeavor is a Canadian YouTuber and nationalist commentator. He works with Greg Jones quite a bit. Greg Johnson quite a bit. What am I talking about? I've already lost it. It's not even 8 o'clock and I've already lost it. He works with Greg Johnson quite a bit. He's a superb commentator. And if you haven't checked out his YouTube channel, please, please do so. The quality of his videos, the quality of his commentary, the quality of his discussions are absolutely incredible. We should have had him on this show a long, long time before. He's worked with Jason many, many times in the past. And it's a real pleasure to welcome him tonight. So, Endeavor, please introduce yourself, my friend. Please tell us a bit about your work, what brought you to this movement, and also tell us how we can find you and how we can support you.
Well, thank you for having me on, Mark. Jason, it's great to speak to you both again. But this is the first time I'm appearing on this show, but I'm a longtime listener. And I make right-wing videos for the white positive sphere. I discuss things like political science, culture, history, philosophy, and pretty much anything that I think is worth discussing in the modern world. So that's really what I do with my videos. It's a wide variety of things. I try to, you know, hit people with kind of the cold, hard reality, but also give them some positive messaging, so it's not just always black pills. And what brought me into this movement? I'd say it was really just kind of looking around at the modern world and finding it very boring and very depressing and atomizing. You know, grew up in a multicultural, cosmopolitan city. Certainly not many white people left in Toronto, where I'm from. I've since left that city, but I guess it would just be growing up isolated and kind of not really fulfilled, really. And trying to seek out a something that non-nihilistic and something that actually stood for something beyond just, you know, a future of more Netflix and video games. And I think that this is I feel like this sphere has the best solutions for the problems we face today.
Well, thank you. And what problems do we face today? We were discussing this before the show. We had a nice little bit of a chat today before we went live about COVID. And oh my, are things heating up when it comes to COVID? I can't believe it. The whole country, we were told we were coming out of lockdown for December. And by the end of December, nearly the whole of England has been plunged into what is known as Tier 4, which is, for anyone who doesn't understand the tier system, is basically full lockdown. It's absolutely scandalous. We've had the first lockdown, which went on for the whole of summer. We then went into the second lockdown, which went into December. And now we are into what could easily be seen as a third national lockdown. Not a national lockdown that's been announced, but a national lockdown via the back door. And this was meant to be a time when all the mask wearing, all the social distancing, the vaccination, it was all meant to be paying off. Things were meant to be easing off. Life was meant to be going back to normal. Everyone was saying 2020's been a write-off. I can't wait for 2021. 2021, it's going to be a breath of fresh air. Back to normal, back to reality. No, do not kid yourselves, people. 2021 is going to be as bad, if not worse, than 2020, because everything that they've set up in 2020, they are going to try to bring in 2021. And if you've ever watched a film that builds itself up well from the very beginning, films that do that often have something in them called foreshadowing. They plant seeds at the beginning of the film that then germinate and grow into something bigger as the film goes on. And that's called foreshadowing. It's a way of telling people or hinting at people what might come later in the film. And this is something that directors do quite often. And I'm using a film analogy here because it does feel a little bit like we're in a feature film. And foreshadowing is something that Boris Johnson, the Conservative government, the establishment, the mainstream media, the press have done with COVID. And it wasn't very long after the vaccination was apparently approved and going to save all our lives that they told us that there was a much, much harsher, a much, much more infectious strain on the loose. And this strain was going to bring everyone to a much darker place. The whole economy would be on its knees. Everything would have to go into lockdown. This was going to affect young people much more. But let's look at the facts, people. Let's look at the facts. Today, it was announced, this is on the Daily Mail website, the figures, the mortality figures for COVID for the year are in. And if you look at the deaths of those under the age of 60 who don't have underlying health conditions, the total is less than 400. 388 people have died of COVID who are under the age of 60 and don't have underlying health conditions. That says something to you. This is not the Black Death 2.0. This is not something that is ravaging communities. There aren't dead bodies piled up in the street. You don't have a situation where morgues are overflowing, where there's freezer vans parked on every street corner to cope with the death around us. 388 people this year have died of COVID under the age of 60 without underlying health conditions. Once you start looking at the facts, once you start looking at the mortality rate, once you start looking at the probability of dying of COVID, if you are not very old or infirm, you can see the countermeasures, the measures to stop the spread of COVID, are actually doing far more damage than COVID itself. And they're doing all this, they're stoking up this fear to push this vaccination on us. Now, we were talking about this before the show. Endeavor, what do you think about this? You give us a Canadian perspective on this. How bad are things in Canada?
Well, I actually got the chance to see the reaction to COVID both inside of Canada and outside of it this year. Because I spent a portion of the year in Eastern Europe. And there's, I'd say that the contrast between what's going on in the West and what's going outside is, I mean, they still have restrictions, but it never became something that, you know, you're going to get scolded at for on the metro. You know, you never feel like someone's going to rat you out for not social distancing, for going to your friend's house. And I don't know, it's just weird when you look at all the propaganda that's being released with it and the means of distributing it, that it's almost like it's becoming like this new religion. I mean, a lot of us are all too familiar with the mainstream media and the various anti-white messages that they've been pumping out for decades now. And now they seem to have kind of incorporated this whole COVID ideology into that, which is strange because it's not really something you'd imagine would go hand in hand. Response to a supposed virus and you know, the anti-white ideology, but it seems like these two things have been fused together, like you mentioned in the video you made on the Christmas commercials. I always look forward to that one every year, but now in the Christmas commercials, not only do you have the mixed race couple and the you know, goofy white guy making an idiot of himself, but you have all that but them wearing masks now. And yeah, all I got to say is, like, this is the new totalitarianism. You know, when a lot of us were young, we thought of totalitarianism. You thought of some guy in some communist hat with a baton smacking people over the head or something like that. But no, apparently it's actually dancing nurses and mixed race advertisements telling you that if you go for a walk with your grandma, you're committing murder.
Indeed. And I've just shown on the screen that fact. You can look it up. 388 people this year have died of COVID who are under the age of 60 and don't have underlying health conditions. My family, we're well healthy. Everyone in this household, we're healthy. We're all under the age of 60. Why can't we go about our lives? Well, we can't go about our lives because this is a mad, mad power grab. And I'm so pleased that PA has its homeschooling initiative, because there are now rumours in the UK that children will not be allowed to return to school if they haven't been vaccinated against COVID. What do you guys think to this? Jason, what's your perspective on what's going on? Give us an American perspective as well. Did you have do you have this madness where they're saying that you won't be able to go to school if you're not injected with this vaccination?
Oh, well, but first I have to say, as bad as this gets and as bad as it's continuing to get, I just have to say, for all of those in the UK, you'll understand this. Bring out your mildly unwell, because it's no longer bring out your dead, which it seems was actually something that took place and then, of course, made its way into British comedy and humor for many decades. It's now bring out your mildly unwell, or even bring out your asymptomatic. They might be sick and we'll tell you if they are ill. So, yeah, we're seeing the exact same things here in the U.S. Fortunately, we have states here that are still, I think, a bit recalcitrant. In Virginia specifically, there's a law that compels the government to end the year with a balanced budget. Can you believe it? They can't actually go into debt. It's against the law, although I'm sure they'll be changing that so they can do whatever they want. But there's restrictions in Virginia would be worse. We're seeing the sort of lockdowns that are being implemented in the UK and in Canada in several states in the United States. And yeah, absolutely, this is Endeavor's 100% correct. They are grafting everything they can. This is what anti-whites do, grafting everything they can onto anti-whiteism. And it just becomes this absolute monstrosity, this Frankensteinian tyranny that then is forced on the population by any means that they can arrive at the conclusion. So we're seeing, in fact, Mark, that we had the anti-whites, primarily the ones who call themselves Democrats, are being caught by the half dozen every week or so. After implementing these stringent lockdowns, they're then caught out doing things like playing ice hockey when you're not allowed to even go outside of your house. So the hypocrisy is so black and rank here in the United States. And yet these people continue to get away with these things. But the bright side, of course, is what you're saying there, is that there is this pushback. Now, the pushback is coming in another way here in the United States as well. And perhaps this may be taking place in Canada and the UK, perhaps elsewhere. And that is that schools are now becoming this, they're being transformed in many areas from a place where there was learning to another distribution point for non-white peoples who have come into our countries to acquire medical care, to acquire food, to acquire clothing. This is happening all over the United States. And yes, there is the possibility, there certainly is quite a bit of talk about this, that the children or the and or their parents will have to be vaccinated for the children to attend school. And I say, let's do it then. As long as we're allowed to homeschool, and I know that'll be the segue here, as long as we're allowed to homeschool, then let's do it. Let's not have our children in these places where they are infected, not only with something as it seems as milquetoast as COVID, but they are infected with self-hate, with white guilt, with white noir, and then they end up turning against us in one shape or another. So that's, I'll just drop it there and we can go on to what you have next for us, brother.
Well, I've got a theory about this, and I don't know whether you guys, let's have a bit of a vote in the chat if people want this. I was thinking of doing, I did a show about COVID when it first emerged and what I thought it was, how I thought it would be used, what agenda I thought they were pursuing. And I wonder if people would like a follow-up stream where I just do a stream and talk directly to you guys for about 45 minutes, giving you my theory, because I don't want to chew up an entire show with my theories. But if people would like a Mark Collett COVID special, please hit one. If you don't want that, hit two, and we'll find out whether you guys are up for that kind of stream. I'll do a special if people want that. But the theory that I'm working on is that the governments of the world, people are talking about the Great Reset, and I think it's more than a Great Reset. I think this is a creation of what I'm calling the new peasant class, a new underclass of people, which will be the vast, vast majority of people. We will be cashless. We will be without motor vehicles. We will all be on what I believe. I'm not a vegan. I don't believe in veganism. I do not think it's healthy. I'm not saying that to annoy vegans or to offend people, but every medical report that I've seen that I trust says it's not healthy. They want us on a meat-free diet. They're softening us up for this. The government are saying that in the next couple of years, we'll be on 20% less meat, and that'll be reduced year on year. So what are we going to be? We're going to be trapped in our houses. We're going to be on a government subsistence wage. We're going to be on a starvation diet. We're not going to be allowed to travel. We won't be able to afford these new electric cars because diesel and petrol cars are being banned. And on top of all of that, cash will be withdrawn and the government will be able to access what they're calling bulk bank account data, which basically means we will be peasants. We will be peasants that are trapped in our homes, monitor everywhere we go. We will be low testosterone, low energy, low cash, low freedoms, low rights. And all of this is being brought in because of COVID. But when you look at the figures for COVID, none of it adds up. Now, I get a lot of different things sent to me. And I don't know whether you guys have seen this yourself. I'd love Jason and Endeavor jump in here next. I'm going to be very brief about this, but I've seen huge amounts of footage now coming out of China, specifically out of the Wuhan area, where people aren't wearing masks. They're back at pop concerts. They're celebrating. They're enjoying themselves. They're at public gatherings. And life is back to normal in Wuhan. But we're being told here in the West, things are getting worse, things are getting worse, things are getting worse. And you're looking at this thinking, well, if the epicenter of the outbreak was there, and they are back to normal, they're back having pop concerts, public gatherings, they're not wearing masks. But here, things are getting stricter and stricter and stricter, yet none of the figures point to the need for stricter conditions. What the hell is going on? I mean, I saw a great bit of footage today because this is how arrogant they are. And I'm going to pass over after this, but this is how arrogant they are. And it's over on my Telegram. It's over on my Telegram. So please go. And if you haven't subbed to my Telegram, it's growing quite quickly. But I put something up there today, and it's from a news report on Sky News. And I'm going to read you the headline. And when I say it's the headline, it's the bar at the bottom of the screen. So listen to this. It says, virus pandemic. So that's that hits you straight away, doesn't it? Virus pandemic. Boxing Day this year has been described as one of London one of London Ambulance Service's busiest days ever. And there's some woman, I don't know who she is, she stood there talking into the camera with this underneath, that this is the busiest day ever, ambulances are flying everywhere, COVID's on top of us all. And what's in the background? Well, there must be about 20 or 30 parked up ambulances, just no one there. Well, if it's the busiest day ever in London and ambulances are flying everywhere, why is she stood with a load of ambulances parked up behind her not doing anything? Well, she stood there because this is all a lie. But these people are so arrogant. They're so full of themselves. They're so convinced that we are stupid. They're so convinced that we're sheep. They're so convinced that we're just going to eat all the garbage that they spew forth and tell us to gobble up, that they will lie to our faces in such a naked and blatant way when the truth is actually in shot behind them. Go and look at that picture on my Telegram, guys. It tells a thousand words. These people are lying to us. Endeavor, what do you think about the things I've said? What's your perspective on them bringing in new legislation to reduce us to a virtual slave class?
Yeah, I'd say that's very similar to my theory on what is the end goal of the elites that are in power right now. What is the end goal of the entire project? I think which started, started decades ago, but certainly the COVID thing. My theory is that they couldn't get it with climate change. They tried and tried and tried to scare us about climate change. If anyone remembers the name Greta Thunberg, everyone was hearing that last October. And I feel like they just grappled onto COVID at one point this year. They decided like, this is going to be our thing. And this is what our, this is going to be the one issue that we can use to justify basically anything. So, and then they also have this, they also have the media on their side, so they can just say that anyone who questions it is a conspiracy theorist, or that they don't understand the science, they're spreading misinformation. And with that apparatus, they can basically just say anything. So, one day these 100 people protesting the lockdown, well, they're dangerous and they're conspiracy theorists and they're causing people to die. They're endangering other people. But then, a week later, if there's a Black Lives Matter riot and there's 10,000 people, well, that's okay. That's, that's not actually spreading COVID. And I think that the end goal is similar to what Mark mentioned. And from my experience this year, because you mentioned in Wuhan, I actually was outside the West this year. I was in Russia because I've been back and forth there for the last few years for work. There were still lockdowns. There were still restrictions, but there was parties and stuff like that with people just acting as if it was just life as normal. Now they have reintroduced a lot of the measures, but it doesn't feel like it. Certainly didn't feel like as paranoid as it did in the West. I mean, the province of Ontario, where I'm from, they've gone into complete lockdown. I wasn't able to visit my family this year because flying was very difficult over the holidays. And unfortunately, my parents are still buying into this COVID narrative hook, line, and sinker. So it was unfortunately too difficult for me to do. I still had a chance to celebrate Christmas in my own way, and I still enjoyed the holiday season as I always do. But I think that it's kind of just become their new go-to issue where they can just pull the COVID card on anything. And then that's their moral justification to take away whatever rights that they want. So, if you question any of it along the way, well, then you're anti-science, you're a conspiracy theorist, you're spreading misinformation that'll kill people. And it's pretty disturbing that they kind of have that tool that they can now pull, and it'll always be that same liberal upper middle class people who read The Guardian or CBC or something like that. And they'll always go along with it hook, line, and sinker every time. So yeah, I think it's kind of just become their new, moral justification for doing whatever they want.
Jason, what are your thoughts, my friend?
Well, I'll just underscore everything that Endeavor just said. He just absolutely beautifully put that together. The anti-whites will always endeavor to use everything at their disposal to advance their objective, which is to inflict harm on Western kind and Western civilization. When we understand that it is us and not our ideas, not these abstractions, or not a particular religion, or not a particular form of government that we have, that it is us, then we see that how clearly this makes sense, that they'll use anything as Endeavor was pointing out, we just had, and this climate business is not done yet, though. They're going to continue to endeavor to use the climate and any change that takes place to blame us for anthropogenic global warming or cooling and advance more anti-whiteism. So much effort has been put there. But with this pandemic, they are reaping so many rewards for their objectives that they're going to continue with it as long as the populations of the West will allow them to get away with it, despite the fact that we have a country in Sweden that responded very differently and has already moved through. And I'll just also point this out, another one of those things, and then I'll pass it back to Mark, that we should be reminding each other of. Long before there was a vaccine, and of course we now have this mRNA vaccine, long before there was a vaccine, they were telling us, and many professionals across the board in medical science, specifically that it would take as little as, I think it was 37-38% of people to have acquired a disease such as COVID to then achieve herd immunity. And that's because the disease can only live in people. And if you match its infectivity against the population, then you can determine roughly mathematically how many people need to be susceptible for it to be able to survive and pass easily through a population. In other words, how easily it is or difficult it is to achieve herd immunity. Now we're hearing that as many as 80-85% of people need to be immunized against it in order to achieve herd immunity. So which was it? Is it the case, as we see with other flus and colds and the like, that we only need in the 30s somewhere, maybe low 40s to achieve herd immunity? Or is it 80-85% to achieve herd immunity? Well, I guess as long as they get us to obey, then it'll be as much as we will allow them to say. And I pass it back.
Thank you. Well, one of my biggest concerns, obviously, having a child, is the idea that children are going to have to be vaccinated to be able to go to school. And that would be a huge red line for me. We will be homeschooling Sophia if that is the case. There is absolutely no way she's having the vaccination. Now, my big worry with the vaccination and Sophia is the issue over fertility. Now, the interesting thing is, obviously, there's a huge difference between males and females. We know that gender is real. But females are born with a full complement of eggs. It's quite amazing when you think about it. Obviously, men produce their seed over time. That refreshes. They produce fresh sperm over time. But women are born with a full complement of eggs. At birth, they literally are already cradling the next generation within their ovaries. And if children, if especially young girls, are injected with something that affects those eggs, or injected with something that damages those eggs in any way or damages the ovaries, that's it. There's no recovery. There's no producing fresh eggs. That's it. They're gone. Finished. That's it. That's the end of your family line. Your child is not going to have children. Your entire genetic line is going to be wiped off the face of the planet simply because of some vaccination, which is completely unnecessary, because 50% plus of people who get COVID are asymptomatic. They don't even know they've got it. They can barely spread it as well when they're asymptomatic, because people who spread coughs and colds and the flu, they spread it via sneezing, via coughing, because that obviously projects phlegm, mucus, and other nasty stuff out there, which is full of the disease. But if you're asymptomatic and you're not coughing, you're not sneezing, you're not spluttering, you're not spreading the disease. It's as simple as that. So the fact is, we're talking about potentially sterilizing generations of children for a disease that the majority of people, even if they got it, wouldn't know they even had it. This is absolute insanity. And then you start looking at this and realizing it's not insanity, is it? the people making these choices, the people making these decisions, the people pushing this, they're not insane. They're not mad. They're not just making a series of bad decisions. And that's one of the problems I have with a lot of CivNat groups, because a lot of CivNat groups, they always hold on to this idea that politicians can be reasoned with, that politicians can be talked to, that politicians can be appealed to, that if we march on the streets, if we go to their places of work, if we go to their offices, if we go to embassies, we can picket them, we can demonstrate, we can make them see sense. I know nationalists that have said to me, Mark, why don't you send a copy of your book to every MP? You could send a copy of your book to every MP. And if just 5-10% of them actually read it, can you imagine the impact that could have? That is making the assumption that 5-10% of MPs are inherently good people who are just making bad decisions. And I don't believe that to be true. I believe MPs are intelligent, rational people. They're intelligent, rational people who are making purposeful decisions to harm us. None of this is done by accident. And that idea that it is all being done by accident, that it is just one blunder after another, is what always gets them off the hook. They leave their positions, they move on, they get their fat parliamentary pension, they get a lovely leaving package, a golden handshake, and then they go into big business, or they go into the banking sector, or they go around speaking at after dinner meetings for 5 or 6 figure sums. And there's never any blowback for them. There's never any situation where they're pulled in and prosecuted for what they do, because they have parliamentary immunities. And this is insane. This allows these people to always pass off their bad decisions as errors, as just unfortunate blunders, as mistakes. And obviously the press go along with this, but this is a reason why I don't like civic nationalists, because civic nationalists go along with this. They go along with the, oh, it was just a series of unfortunate decisions. No, it's not. It's a series of terrible, horrible, anti-white decisions, but those decisions are calculated and knowingly made. And I believe, and I've said this from the start of this, that the biggest threat we face is not COVID. It never has been. The biggest threat our people face, not just in Britain, not just in Europe, but in the Western world, and that includes Canada, that includes America, that includes Australia and New Zealand, the biggest threat that we as people of European descent face in the Western world is demographic change. We face this absolutely massive issue of changing demographics. We face this issue of becoming either a minority in our ancestral homelands or a minority in lands that we founded, that we created to be European states outside of Europe. And that is the big problem, not COVID. But COVID, and I said this from the start, will be used to further that demographic change. It will either be used to get rid of elderly white people, which the government will then say they have to be replaced by fertile, strong, young migrants. Or in this case, it will be used to push a vaccination that will make us infertile, that will sterilize generations of young white people. And I've already said this, but I'm sure that certain religious groups will have religious exemption for vaccinations. They will not be forced to take it. We will be forced to take it. We're not forced to take it initially. It will be a case of major state coercion in order to make us take it. We will have our arms twisted up our back. And most people won't homeschool. Most people would let their children run the risk of sterilization because they still hold on to the hope of getting back to normal and having 2 foreign holidays a year and having 2 cars on the drive and making sure that they get away for a mini break every month in the countryside. And they like to have a couple of bottles of wine every night, and all of these things add up, and they want that Sky package that's £120 a month, and all these things add up, and they need to pay for that. So they're not going to sit at home homeschooling, because both members of the family need an income. And I believe that whatever happens with COVID, will all feed into this anti-white agenda. Every part of the COVID agenda will speed our demographic decline, whether it be that elderly white people disappear in mass numbers and do die of COVID, and they are replaced by young, fertile non-whites from abroad, or whether it be that vaccinations are brought in that sterilize white children. This whole thing will be used to push their ultimate goal. And that ultimate goal is our destruction and our replacement. What do you guys think about this? Can you see the anti-white agenda within the COVID agenda?
I guess I'll take it first. Yeah, definitely. You can start to see just in the propaganda with all the messaging that they put out through things like advertising, through things like Hollywood and the mainstream media. It's now infused COVID into all the regular anti-white messaging that we've seen. And it's the same crowd who's constantly lecturing you about it. And you can just look at the World Economic Forum's Twitter account. One day they're telling you about how we need a great reset because of COVID. The next day they're telling you how the English countryside is racist against black people because they not enough of them go there. I mean, it's the one and the same group who's pushing this stuff. And you know, I don't know what the actual effects of the vaccine are. I pray that that is not the case. I pray that it does not result in people being sterilized. But I mean, the people that are ruling us, they've cried wolf one too many times, and they demonstrably are against us. They want us gone, clearly. And I wouldn't trust them as far as I could throw them. So what I'd say to people is don't take the vaccine, because the people that are pushing it have shown that they have very ill intentions for you. And until there's been hundreds of millions of people that have taken it, and it's been shown to not be dangerous, then I would not even touch the thing. But then beyond that, they're still saying that, oh, well, even after the vaccine comes out, we're still going to need social distancing. We're still going to need to wear masks. So what's the point of the vaccine to begin with? I think that the analogy that I used is that if you could think of like World War One, for example, and you looked across the trenches and you saw the enemy army over there doing something and you don't quite know what they're doing, you're wondering, what are they up to over there? But, you know, you can be assured that what they're doing over there is going to be hostile to you. And, you know, I think that's a good way to look at the elites that we have today. We might not exactly know what they have planned for us, but you can bet your bottom dollar that it's going to be something that is used to harm us. And, you know, what I think they're doing with a lot of this stuff is they're constantly like keeping the public like one step away from the normalcy. They're going to say like, well, after we get the vaccine, oh, there's a new strain. Well, you need your second dose of the vaccine. And it seems like they're just pushing it along and along further and further back and constantly giving you that promise. But then they'll also sneak in there saying, oh, well, we're still going to need to continue the social distancing thing. So, yeah, I'd say with the vaccine issue, don't take it until hundreds of millions of people have already taken it, because, you know, the people that are ruling us, we know that their intentions for us are not very good.
Both Mark and Endeavor are 100% correct. I mean, this is exactly, and I really like the visual of, you know, that when you are in a war, an actual war that is on a battlefield, and you can see the opposition and their flag is flying and they're up to something. This is the case with the anti-whites, the anti-white oligarchy. Everything they're doing, we know, is anti-white, because we can see what they fund and we can see what they punish, and then we can see the outcomes that they celebrate. So we know that in all of those cases, they are anti-white. It harms us directly or indirectly by harming our civilization, and we need those things, those norms, those settings to feel that harmony. Those supports to life are essential. We see that the sophistical arguments that are always taking place when the anti-whites open their mouths. We know that when it came to this vaccination, that they are not in the United States, even though the CDC, the rules that have been written and the studies that have been done and their board's specific recommendation on the allocation of the vaccine, let us assume for a moment that it's one that is going to be safe, at least for the elderly, so because they won't be reproducing children, that the vaccine that would have been safe and would have been used on the elderly, since those are the ones that are actually primarily, of course, dying from COVID-19. They ended up drawing down on that decision because another anti-white came in and literally saying that the elderly population in the United States is too white to give the vaccination to. And now remember, no matter what it says, no matter what you believe about the vaccination or the drug itself, this is where the anti-whites have been moving for a very long time. Just last year, we were talking about how in the UK, they were discussing, maybe if you are white positive, you're a heretic in some shape or form, you won't get the medication, you won't get the treatment that you're supposed to have. People could refuse to give you treatment, the actual EMS workers, doctors, nurses, and the like, because they could feel offended, they could feel threatened, and et cetera. Well, this is just another step in that direction. They ended up saying that, of course, the medical staff is first because they have to treat people with COVID-19. And then the next group is the non-medical frontline workers, which can be anything from like somebody selling alcohol. And the reason they gave is because this population of workers is primarily non-white. These will be the people who will be getting the vaccination first. But again, rest assured, they are doing everything they can, as Mark is pointing out, to manipulate everyone into getting this mRNA vaccine. And then, of course, we have several others coming out. I did read earlier today that the M and whoever, how, whatever your view might be on this, whether good, bad, indifferent, the mRNA vaccine can be very easily tweaked. So they say that even as COVID-19 goes through different iterations, as it morphs, which viruses are wont to do, which I'll also point out for those who are curious, over time, all viruses attenuate. They all become weaker. They don't become stronger. So if something stronger is happening, it is very bizarre. You have to look much more deeply there. If it's becoming far more, the infectivity going up, the R naught value, the actual mathematical formula, that going up, you have to look more deeply there. Why do viruses attenuate? Why do they become weaker? Because they too, of course, not when it comes to RNA, technically not alive, but they too want to live. They too want to survive. And they can only do so if they can get into you and not kill you and get onto the next person. When they kill people too quickly, they die out. And that's the end of it. So keep an eye on claims that, whoa, it's gotten so much deadly. It's gotten so much more infective. Now we're going to need you to stay inside even longer. Just wait by the door for the government to show up with the syringe.
Well, I worry about these mutant strains, not because I'm actually worrying about the mutant strain, but because I'm worrying about how the government are painting this. Now, I think that normal people were done with COVID. They were done with Project Fear. We were seeing normal people say, look, I'm sick of this. I want to go out. I was starting to see more and more people without face masks in shops. I was starting to see more and more people gathering together. I'll just take my street, for example. I was starting to see lots of people having family over again, people acting normally. Now, I know that my partner, she's got some friends who are a bit scared of it. They were, quite a few of them were buying into it. Now, none of them are. And they're all going out again together. They're going out for walks. They all met up today and went for a walk at the local National Trust Park. And they took three little girls, they all went out and they all went for a walk in the snow together. And that was a really nice afternoon out for them. They're all socializing. People were sick of it. People were sick of hearing about it. They were sick of lockdowns. They were sick of not working. They were sick of seeing their local shops being shut down and run out of business when all they saw was Amazon and DPD deliveries flying into their streets day after day. People have had enough. They didn't want to comply anymore. But what I am concerned about is that despite that, despite there being hope, despite people pushing back against it, they've ramped it up again. They've taken their rhetoric to a new level. We've got a mutant strain. Now, when you say the word mutant, what springs to mind? And I'm watching the chat here. When I say the word mutant, what springs to mind? Well, for me, it's a couple of things. There's a huge negative. Go on, Endeavor. What springs to mind? Say something.
I was going to say either the X-Men or the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
It's funny you say that, because I was actually arguing with somebody the other day about which was the best beat 'em up on the Super Nintendo, and it is clearly Turtles in Time. But when you say mutants to people of our age, especially to men, it does mean Teenage Mutant Ninja or Teenage Mutant Hero, depending where you live. Here in the UK, they were Hero Turtles, because at the time the word ninja was banned on any children's product. So here, everything is branded up as Hero Turtles. To me, they were always the Hero Turtles. X-Men is another thing that you think of. But to people who aren't of maybe our age bracket, or who didn't run around the garden with makeshift swords and other turtle weaponry, mutant is something that's scary. It's the mutant strain. It's mutated. Oh, my God, what's going to happen? And people have this thought of this disease that was bad enough as it is, but now it's mutated. What's it turned into? Oh, will it be 70 times as infectious? Will it grab hold of you? Will people be coughing up their lungs? Oh, my God, it's mutated. And then Boris Johnson saying it's more infectious and people are starting to panic. And that fear, which over time had dissipated, that fear, which over time people had got used to and said, look, I'm not scared anymore. I've had enough. I'm not scared. I used to be scared, but I'm not anymore. I want to get on with my life. Let me get on with my life. I've had enough. That's going. And people are now feeling the fear again because of this mutant strain. And obviously, the fact that it's COVID-19 logically means that there has been 18 other COVIDs that have gone before. So this is obviously something that does develop. And as we all know, every year there's a couple of new colds, there's a new flu virus. Viruses do evolve over time. It is just natural, because they have a very, very short lifespan. Bacteria and viruses have a tiny, tiny lifespan. That means their evolutionary cycles are much, much shorter. That's why you have super bacteria in hospitals. That's why you have new colds and flus every year. Obviously, COVID is going to change over time. But the way they're playing this out is to build that fear up again, to build that panic amongst the populace. That's what this is all about. It's what it's always all been about. And now we are starting to see some of the people who were ready to shake this off, some of the people who were ready to say, you know, enough's enough, I want to go back to normal, they're back on board a little bit with the government's message. And you're seeing this in the mainstream media. And I've noticed, because I always monitor, I don't just read the articles on the Daily Mail website. Often the articles don't really merit being read. I read the headlines, I skim through the articles very quickly. I pull out the information I want from the articles, the truthful nuggets. I use those to promote our cause and back up things we say. But I tend to spend as much time browsing through the comments, because it's a good barometer of how people feel about any given issue, how the public feels about the news on that given day. And the interesting thing about the Daily Mail site is over the last few months, you've seen more and more pushback against the COVID narrative. You see more and more pushback against the idea of mass vaccinations. You've seen pushback against all of the different things the government are trying to push upon us, and especially about Christmas. People wanted to get back on with their lives. But since they've announced this mutant strain, you can see the comments going in the other way again. People getting worried, people scared, people worried for their elderly relatives, people worried that they might catch it, that it could be more infectious. And now they're starting to claim, even though all the nurses and doctors are still appearing in those cringeworthy TikTok videos and ambulances are parked up in their bays, they're now trying to claim that hospitals are overwhelmed. Well, these Nightingale hospitals are still empty. But what do you think about this endeavor? What do you think about this mutant strain? How do you think this is affecting people? How do you think this is making people reassess the lockdown?
Yeah, what I was going to say was that if COVID-19 was the first horror movie, then this new strain is the direct to DVD sequel that came out in 2004 or something like that. That's what I thought. That's what it made me think of. I hope that people aren't falling for it again. I do believe that it's called COVID-19 because it was first discovered in 2019. So I think that's where the number actually comes from. but I just hope that this is, I just hope that this is the one issue that that pushes people too far. I hope they don't fall for this new strain nonsense. Because you know, COVID is not something that the normie can just ignore. They can't say that, well, I just don't care about COVID, because it's literally in their face, absolutely everywhere they go, 24/7. I hope that this is the one issue that finally gets people to say enough is enough, and it actually is the one that can springboard us to greater things. Because it is the big one. It's the one that no one in society can choose to ignore. No one in society can choose to say they don't care about. If you don't want to live like that forever, eventually people will just have to stop obeying the rules. I think that they kind of have to just gin up the fear. They constantly have to gin up the fear. So, you know, once Jason's turned his profile picture. They have to just gin up the fear constantly, because, you know, once people realize, oh, it's not that bad, well, then the entire charade will come down. So I hope that this is the one issue that people finally put their foot down on.
Having just mutated myself, I thought I could speak directly to mutations. I don't remember which. Is this one Leonardo, or I don't know which one the blue one was, I'm afraid, but I do.
Yeah, it was Leonardo.
All right, Leonardo. I've mutated into Leonardo. So as having recently mutated myself, both Endeavor and Mark, I'm absolutely on the same page. And I really think what Mark was talking about earlier was hitting so close to exactly what is taking place. I mean, this is like the smart bombs going in through the windows that the U.S. would brag about during the second Iraqi war, second Gulf storm. The anti-whites are telling you who they are, that they're anti-white. And this, of course, is how we can share this with our friends, family, and strangers to help bring them over to going free, to help them becoming white positive. They tell you who they are by pushing this continually mutating narrative about COVID-19, COVID-20, COVID-21 coming soon. They tell you who they are by talking about this. And then secondly, what their objective is, by giving you argumentation, again, sophistical argumentation, to put you back into the same state that was so effective for them. Mark was talking about the small shops getting shut down. Here in the United States, we have all of these videos coming out on a daily basis, very sad videos. There are white business owners and non-white business owners who are furious over what's happening to their businesses as a consequence. One video that was a restaurant owner pulled his truck out behind the guy who had just shut him down for operating in a way that wasn't COVID friendly. And he said, well, if I'm not going to be allowed to work, then this guy's not going to be allowed to work. People are getting angry. And we need to take the opportunity to tell them why these individuals in the news and entertainment media, et cetera, why they are endeavoring to do this. We need to make sure that they know that it is because these people are anti-white and they're endeavoring to achieve anti-white objectives. This is why we should ever talk, in my opinion, is that we should be bringing folks around to white positivity. And there's nothing more blatant right now than COVID-19, 2021, and their use of it to achieve anti-white objectives, which, by the way, I'll just say this, I'll pass it back to Mark. All of these businesses that are being put out of business, the small businesses, you look at even the non-white businesses, and this was the tangential point that I wanted to make there. In the United States, at least, and I see this taking place everywhere else in the world, the money that's being set aside, like the money, the big spending bill, the many trillions of dollars that was just passed here in the United States, the money for small businesses specifically earmarks non-white businesses. The states have to go out by law to receive this money and find all of the non-white owned businesses in the state. Then they have to contact the non-white business owners in the state. Then they have to do their paperwork for them so that they can get our tax dollars. That is before the money can be allocated to anyone else. Guess who's going to get the money next? companies like Amazon, because little white-owned mom and pops are not going to be able to do a battle against companies like Amazon and Walmart and Target and the rest. So those will be the companies that get the money next. And then if there's any left over, it will be for the white business owners. So just has been the case for decade upon decade across the West, where we have seen grants, and we've talked about this in actual law as well, the grants and forgiven loans to non-whites have forgiven on taxation, etc. All of this targeted to non-white business owners has essentially established non-white business owners as a new owner class in our countries, such that we as whites, the creators of the West, the builders of the nations we live in, end up being serfs to these new non-white class. And let me tell you, when they come from countries like India, where they naturally have a caste system, they love to put you right into that caste system underneath of them as just another employee that if you're not working for as little as somebody who might not be a citizen, some non-citizens willing to work for, well, then they're just get rid of your ass. This will solidify it across the West. I pass it back.
Thank you very much. Well, I think we've made some important points tonight, and we do have some super chats. There is still plenty of time to super chat if you wish to do so. I'm just putting the link in the live chat now. The link's also on my Telegram, and I'm going to do these now. So Jez gave $10. Thank you very much, Jez. He said, what will you be doing for New Year's Eve? Well, actually, Jez, I am busy on New Year's Eve because I'm appearing on Frody Midyard's stream. So unfortunately, I'll be busy then. However, Jez, I am free on Saturday evening if you fancy coming over for a legendary Chinese. So that's it. I'm calling it live on the show Saturday night this week. I will be having a Chinese with my friends. The lockdown be damned. Jez, you are invited over, my friend. I can't pronounce your name. The next one, $3. Thank you very much. It's Rip at it's a Finnish name, and I really struggle with this. I don't know whether you guys can pronounce Finnish names. I will butcher it, and I don't want to do that. So I'm going to put this in the private chat. If you guys can pronounce that, can either of you pronounce that name?
No, I'm not going to try.
No, sorry.
Sorry. So it's spelled RIPATTAJA. I cannot pronounce that. Sorry, my friend, but thank you for the $3. He says, Merry Christmas and better new year 2021. Greetings from Turku, Finland. Thank you very much. Daniel Lewis gave £30. Generous donation. Thank you very much, my friend. And he just said, thank you. Well, thank you. That means a lot. Serena JB gave £5. Thank you very much. And she said, saw an example of non-whites appropriating Irish culture put out on Ireland's national public broadcaster and partly done so that they could call people who objected to this travesty racist. Why does cultural appropriation only ever go one way? Well, thank you, Serena, and thank you for the donation. I think that's a very, very important point when it comes to cultural appropriation. Cultural appropriation does only ever cut one way. If we adopt anything that non-whites have done, then we are monsters. I remember seeing an article, and I'm sure somebody can pull this up in the chat. There was a couple of ladies in America, and they had an idea of doing, I think it was a mobile burrito stand. And they were going around making burritos and tacos and other Mexican food and selling them at events or on the streets. And neither of these women happened to be Mexican, nor did they have any Latin American heritage. But both of these women obviously should have been free to cook as many burritos and tacos as they wanted. But these two women were attacked relentlessly by the media to the point where they both decided it would be better if they folded their burrito business, and that was it. They weren't going to sell any more Mexican food. So now white people in America aren't even allowed to open a business that produces food of, you know, that originates from a different part of the world. How absurd is that? Does that mean that white people aren't allowed to cook Chinese or Indian food? But what happens if somebody who is Mexican decides to prepare a traditional English dish or a Scottish dish or a German dish or a Swedish dish? What happens if somebody who's Mexican decides to start cooking Swedish meatballs? Well, of course, that's not a problem. It's not a problem when black people dye their hair blonde and straighten it. That's not cultural appropriation. But it is cultural appropriation when white people braid their hair or put them in dreadlocks. I mean, how absurd is that? It's completely illogical, but it's meant to be illogical. It's not meant to be logical. It's simply meant to be anti-white. And we've all got plenty of examples of this nonsense. But I would say the most horrific example of this double standard is what's called the MOBO Awards, which stands for the Music of Black Origin Awards. Now, this is ridiculous because all of the black artists producing this music are producing that music in a recording studio using a microphone, using synthesizers, using computers, using all forms of technology that were created by people of European descent. So essentially, the whole idea of the MOBO Awards is a complete joke, because there wouldn't be any modern black music as we know black music if it wasn't for white technology. So surely the whole idea of black recordings is cultural appropriation, because it's our technology. But to say that, you would get absolutely torn to shreds. What's your view on this endeavor?
Well, there's a few aspects. One, there is that you have to understand the goal of the elites, the goal of this entire system is to destroy us. And culture is something that is very powerful. It's something that people will fight and die for. It's something they'll give their life meaning. And in order to destroy a people, you have to destroy those very things that, you know, make them want to live, that give them a reason to exist. And, you know, culture is one of the left has just been, if we want to use that term, that's why the anti-whites have just been so focused on culture for decades and decades and decades, trying to destroy it. And I mean, like this Irish video, for example. And the other thing this shows is how real race really is, because it's not something you can be neutral on. If they actually just showed regular white Irish people, actual Irish people doing this performance, I mean, then it does speak to it. It speaks to something deeper, and it does suggest that Irish people are in fact white, which they are. You know, they have to make that conscious choice of who are we going to put in this video and put this forth as Irish culture. So, you know, every time I see one of these movies, these so-called historical movies, and they're just cramming the diversity in there, it's like a yes or no question. They can't do it part way. They can not propagandize you, because either they're going to show you a homogenous white society as it actually existed historically, and then that's going to give people an idea, that's going to make people think twice about diversity. They might think, like, you know, this is something that actually appeals to me a lot more than the modern world does. But then when they do insert the diversity in there, everyone notices it. It just hits you like a ton of bricks, because everyone in their right mind knows that that is not authentic, that it's been put in there it's been put in there to advance an agenda. And it is fundamentally trying to alter our conception of who we are. So that's why they've pushed this cultural appropriation stuff so much. And that's why they have just constantly trying to steal our culture. You know, they'll tell us that basically, I mean, in Belgium, they're trying to say that Beethoven was black. I mean, it's just absolutely absurd. Obviously, just a complete lie. But they have to, you know, tell us that all the great things that our people have created, well, your people didn't actually create that, and you don't have the right to be proud of that. And then also, it's just like they need to constantly have a new quote unquote racism row every day, because in order to keep you in submission, they have to constantly remind you how horrible you are. They have to constantly just find new things to bring up and then browbeat you over through the media, just so that you're constantly in submission. So I'd say that that's why you just see this all-out assault on culture.
Jason, before you give your opinion on this, I just want to play something here. This is Nicola Sturgeon in Scotland talking about what you need to do to be Scottish. And this is how quickly white people are willing to give up their ancestral claims. Now, Just have a listen to this.
Regardless of where they come from, if you choose to live in Scotland, then as far as I'm concerned, you're Scottish. Whether you were born here and three generations of your family were born here, or whether you've only lived here for a few months.
Now, I think that's very important, because there you hear Scotland's head of state, Nicola Sturgeon, saying that to be Scottish, it doesn't matter whether you were born in Scotland. It doesn't matter whether you can trace your family lineage back to the Middle Ages, to the time of Scottish independence, to the time of William Wallace. It doesn't matter. None of that matters. All that matters is that you live in Scotland. Then you are Scottish. Yeah, all you have to do is buy a house or rent a house or go up to Scotland and live on the streets. As long as you're living on that patch of land, you are equally Scottish. No other culture or race would treat the issue of nationality in that way.
One thing that is important for us to remember is that in Canada, there actually is in law that there is a different legal class for someone that's deemed to be Indigenous. So, and it is genetic. You need to have a certain percentage of your genetics be of Indigenous stock, of North American stock, to be considered this legally. And that's not something that you can just that's not something you can just identify as. So, you know, they'll just draw the goalposts to whatever is the most convenient at any given time. Which is why I really like the that you guys in the UK have taken on the title of Indigenous British people, because it's a word that's shoved down our throat 24/7 in Canada. And it really does expose the double standard that, you know, white people aren't Indigenous to anything. Like I said earlier, if they want to destroy you, they have to take everything that is rightfully yours.
Yeah, I mean, everyone derived from a demolished culture is radically diminished thereby. And that is one of the reasons, or I guess speaks directly to the harm that anti-whites seek to inflict on us by white erasing us from our own history, as we are noting here today. They're taking away, they're stealing from us all of our greatest achievements, and then they leave us with lies about all of these grave sins for which we have to atone, even though we didn't commit any of those atrocities or any of those sins against any of the non-white peoples. The best thing to do, I have found in conversation with brothers and sisters out in the world, is to bring up the point of the hypocrisy, of the double standard, and then to say to them with a bit of a wry look that actually there's no hypocrisy here, and let me tell you how. And then you point out how in both scenarios, even contradictory scenarios, and especially in those where you can point out hypocrisy or double standard, that the anti-white achieves an anti-white conclusion. The looks on people's faces when the epiphany hits them is most profound. Yes, in the United States and Canada, we're hit with these so-called indigenous people, and despite the fact that we know very well that they came across the Bering Straits, and that no one was indigenous to the Americas whatsoever, and of course for well over a decade now they've been pulling out of the soil the evidence and pulling out of genetics, DNA, and the rest, the evidence that the white race was the first to the Americas, roughly 10,000 years earlier. This is the sort of thing that in all scenarios, from all angles, the anti-whites will argue with equal intensity at countervailing positions as long as both arrive at anti-white conclusions. And it's something that is very powerful when you want to bring people over to the work of white positivity. Remember that the when it comes to cultural appropriation, this again is another argument that the anti-whites are using just to prevent us from having any culture. They can thieve anything they want from us, which is not, it's not unfair. This is what an adversary, this is what a victimizer does to you. They can thieve anything they want from us, but if we use anything that they can claim came from something of some origin elsewhere, then they will say, no, you are not allowed to use that. And so understand that just as we were using the analogy earlier of being on the battlefield, of course, the people on the other side in the trenches on the other side would say, you are not allowed to use that firearm, that M1 Grand. You are not allowed to use that howitzer. You are not allowed to use the bazooka. You are not allowed to use these things. It is unfair for you to. Well, the only question is whether or not you are going to listen to them anymore. And I pass it back.
Thank you. I think we've really gone to town on that one, but I think it's an important question. Serena definitely deserves a full answer. She supports us all year round. She's somebody that I was really looking forward to meeting at the next PA conference, but unfortunately, because of the situation that we're in, we haven't been able to hold it. But thank you so much, Serena, for the donation, and I hope you had a lovely Christmas and New Year. Yiz the Eunuch gave $3. Your name always amuses me. And Yiz said, COVID insanity is great for witnessing to vagues. It's a fantastic way to bring up some of our key issues with people. We should all seize the opportunity. Nationalism, ho, no white guilt. Well, thank you very much for that, Yiz, and I hope you had a great Christmas. Stanley Sloggett gave £15. Thank you very much, my friend. You've been a great supporter all year. I hope you had a wonderful Christmas. And he says, here's to 2021 and PA still rising. Well, 2021, we have a renewed schedule for PA. We are doing lots of different things. If you don't know what we're doing, me and Laura did a Christmas special where we outlined some of the initiatives for next year. And one of the initiatives that was going to be a real world initiative will be taking place as anti-lockdown protests all over the UK in the coming weeks and months. So keep your eyes peeled for that. We are going to be fighting back against this madness. And thank you very much for the super chat. Now, we have a very generous super chat from Mr. Bloom, $100. Thank you very much, my friend. He said, hi, Mark. Just wanted to say thank you to both you and Jason for really opening my eyes this year. God bless PA and everyone trying to achieve white well-being. Me and Richard Wagner had a first attempt of leafleting last week. It was much harder than we thought since there was only two of us and we had 3,000 on hand. It may take a few outings to get them handed out. Well, thank you, Mr. Bloom. Thank you for the very, very generous super chat. And thank you for buying the leaflets. I'm pleased things are going well, but 3,000 leaflets does take some time. Now, I remember when I was back in the BNP, I used to stand in an area called Richmond Hill. Richmond Hill was a good area because it had lots of back-to-back terraced houses, and back-to-back terraced houses are amazing for leafleting. You fly down, there are no drives, you're just banging out leaflets. The streets are so easy just to go up and down. It's absolutely brilliant. But even with a team of about six people, it would take us with terraced houses about an hour and 20 minutes to get 1,000 leaflets done. So 3,000 will take you some time. I tend to find that for an average leafleting session in an average area, not mega long drives or anything, it will take somebody around an hour to put out, or just over an hour to put out 100 leaflets. It's something that can be quite time consuming, but you can speed it along. You can get little devices that you pop through the letterbox, so you slide your leaflet through those, and that does make it easier. And also, don't do what I have done in the past and others have done. Poke your fingers through and get mauled by a dog. I remember taking somebody to A&E in Harrogate. That was the least busy A&E at the time, and I had to take them there because they'd stuck their hand through a letterbox and been bitten by a dog. Funnily enough, the worst injury I've ever had leafleting was when I put my fingers through a letterbox and a cat, believe it or not, jumped up, sank all its claws into my fingers, and then raked its way down. I pulled my fingers out of the letterbox so quickly and with such force, the actual letterbox came off, and I felt quite stupid because I'd basically wrecked somebody's letterbox, and I'd let out the giantest scream that I could in the middle of the street. It was absolutely awful. I felt terrible. All the other leaflets was like, what the hell are you doing? And my hand was bleeding quite heavily, actually, because those cat's claws actually can create quite a bit of damage. So that was bad. The other really bad time I had leafleting was I once got chased by a mixed race guy who had gone into his garden shed and produced a spade, and he chased me with the spade. That wasn't good either, but he never caught me. So technically, the cat did more damage than the guy with the spade, which is good. Divine Insurgent gave $5. Thank you very much, my friend. He said, imagine being in a coma for slightly over a year and waking up to the world today with all of its changes. Yeah, I talked a bit about that in my Christmas video. What do you guys think to that? It'd be a bit like 28 days later, isn't it? You go into a coma if you went into a coma just before Christmas last year and woke up just before Christmas this year, what would you be thinking? You'd be thinking the whole world went mad. In fact, I don't know whether you guys have seen, but there is actually a American feature film in a big Hollywood production that's coming out shortly about coronavirus and about the lockdowns, but with coronavirus being something now that attacks your brain and basically reduces you to, to somebody that's mentally incapable. It kills you. It's basically like a brain-destroying disease. Have you guys seen that?
No, I haven't. Is it meant to be like another propaganda film to scare people?
I'm going to find the trailer to share it with us. So if you two fill this, otherwise what would be dead air? And I am going to find this trailer.
That is what it is, Endeavor. What do they call that again? The name for it. There's in psychological warfare, when you introduce an idea and the population gets used to it. And then when you introduce it into reality, there's less objection to it. This is one of the things, by the way, that in the creation of Go Free, the practice of going free, we looked into quite heavily because we know that psychological warfare has been used against the populations of the West for a very long time. That's how we've been defeated. No big army has marched in. It's been nothing but concepts and ideas that have defeated us. So our greatest that we had to present to the world, undermined by the viper's venom, hiding in the tall grass.
Well, I'm going to pop this trailer on now, so I hope you're all ready for this. Make sure I've got the audio shared. The film is called Songbird, and here we go.
Good morning, Miss Garcia.
Good morning, sunshine. I miss you. I could kiss you right now.
Yeah, well, someday.
Curfew is now in effect. All unauthorized citizens must stay indoors.
Tensions rise as we enter the 213th week of lockdown.
A grim new reality emerges.
COVID-23 has mutated.
Beginning thermal scan. Thermal scan normal.
A horrifying new development
new
today.
New data confirms the virus attacks the brain tissue.
Get on your knees!
Whoa! I'm immune!
Worldwide death toll rises to over 110 million.
All infected Americans are being forced into quarantine camps.
Sarah, what's going on?
Department of Sanitation.
Sarah, talk to me.
I think my neighbor has a fever.
It'll be so much easier if you just open the door. Mrs. Grant, you have visitors.
Sarah, do not open that door.
Beginning thermal scan. 3, 2, 1. Anomaly detected. Armed guards will be arriving in 4 to 6 hours. You must not attempt to leave your home, or you will be shot on sight.
This is my message to you.
I know you're in there.
They're coming. To let you go.
No.
Sarah!
Say goodbye to me.
Sarah, I'm not letting you give up.
This is my message to you.
Sometimes we have to do things we don't want to survive.
I'm trying to save the one person left in my life that matters to me.
I can't help you. What you're talking about is illegal.
Ego.
Stay safe, sane, and sanitized.
So what did you guys think to that then?
I don't know if Michael Bay is trying to actually get people to question the lockdowns or something. It is kind of funny though that the choice of the casting, it's like the non-whites knocking on the door, please let me in, and you're supposed to feel bad that the white woman didn't let them in. It's like,
she was Hispanic, Sarah Garcia, I believe. There was a bit of the old mixed race and America becoming Hispanic thing being pushed there too.
Yeah, and it's also, of course, it's like the evil white man who's enforcing all this stuff, as always.
Yeah, of course. excuse me, Mark, you're absolutely right. They're going to be, it's the whole panoply of anti-whitism. You're going to see the biological white erasure. Just get yourself a non-white mate. And then I assume what we're seeing there in the young, I did only saw him for a split second, so perhaps you all can fill me in. But what I assume is going to take place is it's going to be those multiple raced individuals who are going to be the ones who end up being immune to the virus. That they're, boy, that just doesn't serve a specific group of people, does it? That the mixed, massively mixed race people are going to end up being the ones that are immune and will be saved from the disease. This surely is the predictive programming that we were looking for earlier. And thank you for writing that into the live chat. I'm disgusted by this. I'm infuriated by it. And you know what else disgusts me even more is that we're going to end up watching, and I know we just burnt about a lot of time, so I'll pass it right back so we can get back to the wonderful people's comments and questions from this magnificent audience we have in the white positive sphere. But what really agitates the hell out of me is we are going to see people in the white positive sphere, in the magosphere, and et cetera, and they're going to review this movie, and then they're going to say one thing about the predictive programming. They're not going to say one thing about the biological white erasure. They're not going to say one thing about everything that actually matters for you, me, the children to come, the women in the wombs, the eggs that Mark was talking about in the little girls' bodies right now for the rest of their life, the full allotment of their eggs. They're not going to say a single thing about that. They're going to talk about, well, what's the movie's motivation or this character's motivation, as though these things were actually real, as though they actually mattered for shit. What's really happening is your ass is locked down in your house, and you're going to be peeping through that little letter box that Mark's talking about, sticking his fingers through, and it's just going to be Mark outside saying, don't be so scared, come on out. They've got you locked down because they want to white erase our people. That's what really matters. That's what we should be talking about when we look at their filth that's in the entertainment, because we are animals who learn by way of imitating. The sitting at the front of a classroom and writing it on a board is terrible when it comes to teaching humanity. What teaches the human animal best is imitation. And they're going to show you right there in this video, in this movie, what it means to be a good human being. And that is going to be something that is the end of Western civilization, Western kind, and whatever is left, whatever brown stew or blackish, yellowish stew that's left behind. That'll be the serfs of that civilization, unless great folks like Endeavor, Mark, and the rest put an end to this. I pass it back.
Thank you. Now, I've got a good idea. We've already started the PA gaming nights. We have the PA baking competition, and we also have the book club and the movie reviews. Now, obviously, this is a movie. The first movie review, I think we settled on it being The Godfather. That's going to be the first movie that we review. That'll be in January. But this could be a movie that we do review. This could be something good. I don't know if the chat would like us to review this, if the chat would like this film to be reviewed by PA, by the movie review team. Hit us with the one. I think it's it looks like a film that should be reviewed, because it's definitely topical. However, I will say this: Michael Bay is involved, and I mean, the first Transformers film was okay, but I've got to say this: every design, or all the designs of the Transformers in those Transformer films, were absolutely horrible. Michael Bay always overdoes it. And I don't particularly like his style of filmmaking. I think that he has a particular style of filmmaking that's all about sort of big explosions, huge set pieces, but very little character development. As I said, although I enjoyed the first Transformer film, they got worse after that. And I just can't abide by Megatron being some stupid advanced fighter plane. He's meant to be a handgun. That's how he was when I was a child, and that's how he'll always be. But yeah, I think that is something we are going to have to review, because it does look as if it's going to be serious propaganda. And again, people will watch that. And I often wonder, and I'm going to throw this out to you two before we do the last of these super chats, but when you see a film like that, or a trailer for a film like that, what are they trying to do? Are they trying to capitalize off the current situation? Because on one hand, they could be just saying, you know what, this is a massive world-changing event. Let's dramatize it. Let's make it worse than it is. Let's make some money. That is one theory. And there is also the other theory that Hollywood often prepares us for things that are to come. I talked about foreshadowing earlier, and the way the press have always been using foreshadowing to predict the next phase of the COVID debacle, so that people are already softened up when it does happen. And I think this might be a case for that. There might be a case that could be made for this film being part of that foreshadowing. They're saying to people, hey guys, you know, this is a potential future. And obviously, if you see things like that enough, if this kind of propaganda is pushed on you enough, when those things actually happen, you are much, much more likely to accept them in real life if you've seen them on the big screen, if you've been softened up to those happenings, because the media, the press, and Hollywood have basically push them upon you and acclimatize you to those situations before they come about in real life. What do you guys think? Is this a Michael Bay cash grab? Is this a very cynical move, or is this part of something much greater?
Well, you're certainly right that Hollywood preps the population for things. They've done this with feminism. They've done this with things like homosexuality and with the anti-white agenda. I don't know exactly what they're going with this one, but one thing, and Morgoth made a great video about this, I think it was last year, that Hollywood for a couple of years now, last few decades, has been pushing these blow up the world movies. You'll have all these movies with this horrible cataclysmic event. And the point that he made is that it says a lot about modern society that you'll have these movies where, you know, millions and millions of people will die, but then, you know, you feel like no connection to it. And it kind of just shows us how atomized and how soulless they've really made society. When you're looking at like one of these Avenger movies, they blow up New York, and you'd have to imagine if this happened in real life, you'd see millions of people die, and then you're just supposed to have no connection to that whatsoever. I think it says a lot about kind of the direction that they're pushing society, and that people can watch these blow up the world movies, and it just is something that no one cares about. So I think it's just kind of another one of those.
Mark, I just have to really underscore what you just said.
Yeah, just go for it.
It was brilliant. There is the issue here, and you're going to run into it, folks, where they're going to say, oh, it's just for dough. It's just for money. That's all that is. I want you all, if you get the opportunity to research this yourself, you'll see that the biggest blockbusters, the greatest net gains, have always across the West been these family-friendly movies. So the more family-friendly, and it demonstrated that if they were to continue in the direction of family-friendly, white family-friendly, that the kind of net gains. So you're talking about not just the money gain, not just the money that's gained, but the cost versus the money that is gained. So the biggest net gains was in the direction of family-friendly movies, and yet these Hollywood, these anti-white bastards, they continue to make these things where they sow as much anti-white as them into the videos, into the movies, into the television movies, as much as they possibly can, because serving that agenda to them, serving that ideological racial agenda for them, is every bit as important as making a dollar. And to somebody who is already deca-millionaires, what is spending a few million dollars, in other words, losing a few million dollars, what does it really mean to you when you already are a deca-millionaire and you get to serve your ideological goal by just foregoing several million dollars that otherwise would have been earned had you created something that was family friendly? But a very important thing that Mark brought up there, because everyone who brings up the fact that these movies are laced with anti-whiteism are going to be faced by vagues out there who will say, oh no, it's just for dollars. It's just for dollars. If you want dollars, make a movie where there is a pandemic and the people easily overcome it, and the world goes back to blissful harmony. Throw some comedy in there. That's what the public actually pays money for. And I pass it back.
Thank you. I think they're excellent, excellent answers. And I do have to comment on what Endeavor says about these films where there is mass loss of life and it's just shrugged off. I think it was The Man of Steel. I don't like the new Superman films particularly. I certainly don't like Batman versus Superman. In fact, that is possibly the worst big budget film. I've not seen Justice League and I haven't seen Birds of Prey. But the two worst big budget films that I've ever seen ever are Batman versus Superman and Suicide Squad, both DC, Warner Brothers DC films, absolute trash, both of them, just complete and utter rubbish. But Man of Steel, which was the reboot of Superman, and that also bled into the beginning of Batman versus Superman, had a couple of scenes where Superman and General Zod, who I actually thought was a pretty cool character, were fighting through Metropolis. And you'll see Superman throw General Zod through a building, or General Zod will kick Superman and he'll go flying off and, you know, literally blast through a skyscraper. And these buildings are just collapsing around them as they fight through the city. And you're watching this. And similarly, in the Avengers films, you just got to ask yourself, how many people are actually dying in those buildings? Because if you've got one of these gigantic, you know, 50, 70, maybe 100 floor high skyscrapers, and it's collapsing to the ground because of some huge impact because Superman has thrown Zod through it, How many people are dying? How many people died when Metropolis was basically destroyed during that fight? And I suppose it does desensitize us to a different type of violence, because the argument with Hollywood was always that Hollywood desensitized us to very close up, very personal violence in the past. It desensitized us to shootings, stabbings, rapes. All of those things were dealt with in very gritty, close up detail by Hollywood. However, now you are seeing huge, huge numbers dying on screen. And obviously you don't get to see the death toll, but it's all just brushed off as, oh, well, it's a statistical loss. It's just what happens. You know, several thousand people died in that one building collapsing into the ground, but they're never going to be credited. We're never going to discuss them again. It's just something that happened. I think that's a really good point. If any of you guys want to add to this, please do so. We'll move on to the next super chat.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it just says a lot about how soulless modern society is that, you know, they do that. The elites kind of do just see us as these numbers, and in their films, you know, like they can just dispose of millions of people, and then you're not even supposed to feel anything. It's you have to wonder would earlier societies have thought the same way? The point that I'm stealing this point from Morgoth, but if he made the point that if you had one of these traditional small villages with these, you know, beautiful homes and shops and maybe a church or a place of worship, you know, you'd actually feel deep pain if you saw that destroyed. But then one of these soulless metropolitan modern cities, you're just not supposed to care about it.
I agree. And I think that could be something that's used in the future. If there ever was a mass death here in the West, those statistics for people, it'd just be just be like something out of a film, wouldn't it? They're just they're treated as if it was a Hollywood movie. Divine Insurgent, he gave $5. Thank you very much, my friend. Oh no, we've already done that one. Sorry, we don't need that one again. Thank you for the super chat. Richard Wagner gave $3. Thank you very much, my friend. He said, "What do you think about an organized PA hike to the highest point in Britain, Ben Nevis, with a White Lives Matter banner?" That is something I would definitely be down for. And I would like to do that at an epic time of year, maybe in the snow or something wacky like that. I'm down for that. Message me and Laura. Let's make that happen. I like that a lot. For Camaraderie gave $5. Thank you very much. Hope you had a good Christmas, my friend. Hi, Mark, Jason, and Endeavour. Here's wishing all Patriots a happy and positive new year. No balloons for Jason. Keep him away from the fireworks. Seriously, there was a time, mate, when PWR was on for 2 hours, and now it's the quickest 2 hours of the week. Hail, bro. Well, thank you very much. It was, yeah, we did have PWR. It was actually, PWR is... just fly past these 2 hours. I've often toyed with making this show a 3 hour show, but I just don't think a lot of people have 3 hours to give to one single show per week. So I try to keep it as tight as I can and run that balance between being accessible, but also doing deep dives. And finally, Weird Internet Guy gave £10 and just said donation. Well, thank you very much, my friend. I hope you had a great Christmas and thank you for the donation and your continued support. So that's the end of the super chats, but there is still time if you would like to make a donation. All donations are gratefully received. Your generosity allows this show to keep going, and it allows me to work full time for this movement. So if you do want to make a donation still, there is still time. Oh, and two more have just popped in. We've got one from Jekatiro, $3. Thank you very much, my friend. He says, wish you all a new year soon. Thank you very much, my friend. And Old Mother Earth just gave $3. Well, thank you very much for the donation. That's very kind of you. And we do have the non-paid super chat. Connor Chickmeister said, "These tyrannical lockdowns are seemingly here to stay if the globalists have their way. Could we see any sort of major uprising in 2021 as more and more normies are waking up to this nonsense?" Well, will we see a major uprising? My answer is, well, if you'd asked me this, just before the recent mutant strain took hold, the mutant strain that I'm not really sure even exists, but if you'd have asked me before that, I would have said that you were about to see mass resistance. You're about to see normal people say, "We've had enough. It's game over for this. We're pushing back." But I'm not so confident of that anymore. I'm not confident of that. I don't know what you guys think, but I think Project Fear is back in full swing. I think these lockdowns are gripping people more than they were before. And again, they are spreading this fear. And I'd love to say that this is going to be the time of an uprising. I will say this, though. Never before in the 20 years that I've been campaigning for nationalism, that I've been doing this, have I ever seen a time so ripe for our cause? We have record numbers of immigrants flooding in. We have a loss of our freedom, a loss of our privacy, a loss of our rights. We have a time where people actually voted to leave the European Union. We have a time where people are genuinely increasingly worried about demographic change. This isn't something that people see as a distant problem anymore. It's not something that people just say, "Oh, well, you know, down in London, there's a few too many of them, isn't there? But it's all right up here." It's everywhere now. And I think there is an appetite for change amongst an increasingly large percentage of the population. But the sad thing is, with the demise of the British National Party, and I'm not going to go into whose fault that was, we know whose fault that was, the situation here in Britain is actually quite grim. We're having to build PA from the ground up. We're having to actually build an actual power-winning party again from the ground up, and that's hard work. That's hard work, and it's very unfortunate because we're in a position where at one time we had MEPs, we had people on the Greater London Assembly. I don't think the Greater London Assembly seats would have ever been retained now because of the demographic change in London. But we had councillors all over the UK. We were the official opposition at one point in Stoke, in Burnley, in Barking and Dagenham. And I think there is appetite for change. I think more people now are talking about things that we talk about than ever were at the height of the BNP. It's just we've had to start again building a power-winning movement, and that takes time. So I think there's pros and cons to the current situation. What do you guys think? Is this a golden time for us? Is this a time where we'll see a major uprising?
Well, I certainly hope so. I certainly hope that this is the issue that people have no choice but to confront, and it's the one that they put their foot down on. You know, I do think it's the best opportunity we'll ever have. You know, I just hope that we're able to muster enough force. I mean, they have been able to quash the anti-lockdown uprisings thus far. But, you know, I think maybe as time goes on, they'll build up more momentum. What I'd say to people is that don't let them take away your humanity. Just make sure that you go out and you see your friends, you see your family, you maintain a social life, because what they want for you is to sit inside all day watching your Netflix, watching your propaganda, eating your bugs and eating some processed crap.
Flying Dutch. Gave $30. Thank you very much for the my friend. I agree. And Happy New Year wishes to you too. Storks gave £10. Thank you very much. Any news about the PA registration as a political party? Well, actually, there is Storks, and I will briefly update you with that. The Electoral Commission wrote to me sometime before Christmas, sent me a load of additional questions. I answered those questions. I sent them back by the deadline. I did speak to a solicitor about the questions. I was advised what to write. I've sent it back. Since then, I've not heard from them. They really are messing us about. But we're going to keep going. And as I said, we have a long time before we have a organization that's big enough to really contest these big national elections. And we're just going to keep applying. We are going to keep applying, and we're going to keep applying, and we're going to keep applying. And eventually we will get through. And if we have to apply a dozen more times, that's exactly what we will do. But thank you very much for the super chat. And I hope you had a great Christmas, and I hope you'll have a wonderful new year. We have a message here from Half Pint. He says, do you think the general population is going to do anything about these unjust lockdowns? I hate to be pessimistic, but I can't see anything happening. Well, we've already answered that, but thank you very much. And also, Half Pint, thank you for joining us last Sunday on the Warzone tournament. I saw you were there. It was good to meet you, my friend. Joe Smith said, to get support from some communities, we should have strong policies about evicting traveller squatting sites and campaigning communities that are affected by it. Well, thank you very much, my friend. Squirrels gave $5 Canadian and said, wish you all a happy new year. Endeavour, you've got support here in Southern Ontario and the great white north. Anglos will rise again. Well, thank you, Squirrels, for the super chat. And Endeavour, do you have anything to say to Squirrels?
Thank you for the support. It's good to know that in my home state, or home province rather, of Ontario, there's some people who watch my channel and support my work. I don't live in Southern Ontario anymore, but you know, next time I'm there, and once all this COVID nonsense is over, him and I will meet someday, and we'll have a good conversation about, you know, Canada and the way of the world and just what's going on, because I definitely want to get involved in networking whenever I get the chance. But the current situation, my current living conditions, and of course the one that everyone's under right now, is going to make that very difficult for me. But someday it will happen. Someday I'll be back there. You know, I haven't seen my parents in months and months and months. They're still in Toronto. They're under lockdown. Unfortunately, they're still paranoid about it. But you know, I think that for a lot of us, it is kind of personal that, you know, our own personal lives are being, you know, taken away from us, and something we have to fight. So, yeah, thanks for the kind words. I'm glad you enjoy my work.
Well, thank you very much. And I just want to touch on something else. People are talking a little bit about the Electoral Commission stuff in the chat. People have got several theories on this, and a lot of theories are being bounced about. The application was completely correct, and it should have gone through on the second time. There was actually a minor error on the first application, but that was corrected very, very quickly. Ever since then, we have been repeatedly frustrated by the Electoral Commission for obvious reasons. And this is something that I think, on one hand, it doesn't bode well for us. On one hand, it's bad because it prevents us from standing in elections. And whilst there is much debate in our movement over whether the electoral road is a direct road to power, I think we can all agree that fighting elections when it is the right thing for us, fighting elections when we can benefit from the publicity of fighting those elections, or where we can actually win a seat and that creates publicity for our movement, is a very, very good thing. And we should never close off any avenues of growth or any avenues of being able to reach the public. Any way we can reach the public, we should never close it off, especially not electioneering. But the interesting thing about this is, whilst on one hand it's frustrating, on the other hand, I actually look at the frustrating situation we're in, and it does give me hope. And you might be saying, well, how can it give you hope? How can not being registered give you hope? Well, it gives me hope because it makes me realize what a threat we are. If these people thought we were clowns, if these people thought that we were never going to get any votes, if these people thought there was no hope for Patriotic Alternative as a political organization, they would have passed us first or second time. They wouldn't have had any problem. They do have a problem because they fear us. And that, for me, is a source of great hope, because I realize that if an organization that is as new as PA can strike such fear into the heart of the system, so much fear, in fact, that the Electoral Commission is doing everything it can to prevent us becoming a registered political party, that, for me, shows that the system knows that what it's doing isn't popular. And I think that's very, very important. We have one last super chat. And again, it's from Squirrels, who gave another $5 Canadian. Thank you very much, my friend. And said, oh, I can't help it. I have to share my good news. Just as Endeavor was responding to my last comment, my midwife just called, and my husband and I are expecting a healthy baby girl this spring. Well, thank you so much for sharing that with us, Squirrels. That is the best possible news we could hear. So congratulations. Obviously, being a father of a little girl, I know just how much joy a child brings to a household, and just how much joy a child brings to Christmas. And obviously, you will be having your first Christmas with your little girl next year. So I wish you all the best for that. Keep us updated, and congratulations. Guys, do you have anything to say to Squirrel before we do the roundup?
Congratulations. We need more people like you in our fight for our country, our civilization, and well done.
Yes, a very warm congratulations to you and your wife, and looking forward to this beautiful child of the West.
Well, that is the kind of news we want to hear. Nothing strikes fear into our enemies. We've been talking about what strikes fear into our enemies, but nothing strikes fear into our enemies quite as much as happy, healthy, white people who are nationalistic, coming together, forming couples and having babies. Our enemies hate it. They fear it. But that is the most important thing we can do. And it's not only important for our cause and for the continuation of our people, but I can attest to this. Having a child and becoming a parent is absolutely the most wonderful, life-changing thing that can happen to you. It's absolutely amazing. So all the best, and thank you for the super chat. Right, so that about brings us to the end of the show. We have one more super chat from Old Mother Earth for $3 US, and it just says IJU. I'm not sure what that means, but thank you very much anyway. And that does bring us to the end of the show. So first and foremost, thank you to Endeavor. If you'd like to tell us where we can find you, my friend, thank you for appearing. It's been a great show, and we wish you all the best for the future, and we'll hope you'll come back on to future shows again in 2021.
Well, thank you for the invitation, Mark, and thank you, Jason. You can still find me on YouTube for the time being. I haven't been banned there yet, but I would also recommend you check out my BitChute channel, because when the ban hammer eventually comes down, which it will, that's where you can find me. I'm on Twitter for the time being as well, but Telegram is my backup for that. So definitely check me out on Alt Tech as well, because I think that's going to be the future. We're going to have to jump platform to platform. So I'm going to be continuing my work next year with, some videos on the situation as it is, and, you know, also some videos on culture. I have an ongoing series with Morgoth where him and I will review a film each month, and it'll alternate between his channel and mine. Last month was on his channel. So, in January, we're going to be reviewing the movie Dr. Zhivago on my channel. So definitely check that out. So, thank you for having me on. Great show, and I hope I can do it again in the future.
Thank you very much. Jason, my friend, how can we stay in touch with you? Who's on tap? And are you doing anything special for New Year?
Well, I actually don't know. We're getting together our tap right now. I want to give a big thank you to Endeavor for scintillating on today's show. Magnificently done, and we hope that you become a regular thought leader and contributor in service to white well-being. You're doing a splendid job. I really would like to just take this being the last show of 2020, a year that has been, of course, fraught with a lot of downturn, a lot of challenges, but also a lot of glorious things. And not the least of which was beginning the first part of the year and heading out into the world when the threat was all of those videos of the people dying right on the streets out of Wuhan, China, and dead on the steps. And we went ahead and had a magnificent conference over there in the UK. It was truly splendid. I just want to take the opportunity to say, because I know we're on the final seconds, I think for myself, I know for Mark, that we have a very, very special group of people who appear here week after week, this great gathering of all of you and all of you heroes in service to white well-being. You are the best by far, even those who have been critical of me. You're the best folks out there across the West. You're told on a daily basis how you are the worst, how you are evil, when indeed you are the best in your families. You're the best in your communities. You're the best in our countries, and you are going to be the reason why all of us together, standing shoulder to shoulder, that we will recapture that destiny and see that sun rise in the West. So I want to send my deepest heartfelt thanks to every single one of you, those who listen live and those who listen in replay. Much love to all of you from the once great state of Virginia, and a big salute to our leader, Mark Collett, here on PWR, for all that he has done over the course of 2020, holding this ship of a state, in a way, if you will, together as the seas have rocked us to and fro, and we've lost some of the masts along the way, and yet we are still sailing strong and heading in a direction that is salubrious and healthy for every single one of us. Thank you so much, Mark. And to all of you, I look forward to seeing you in 2021.
Well, thank you very much. So that about brings the show to a close. Please jump over to James Goddard's channel on YouTube. Can some of the mods hit the chat with the link for James's channel? He's doing James Goddard's 2020 in review. I will be there in a few minutes. So there's going to be some more great nationalist content over with James very shortly. So please, please do go and join him now if you can. That would be superb of you. And I will be there very shortly. I'll be doing a little burst with him. It's a very busy night for me. I will also be back on Friday with the lovely Laura Towler and numerous PA content creators. We will be doing a New Year's special. The lineup for that's going to be incredible. It's going to be the lads from Taysob. It's going to be Urba Derba. It's going to be Jody Kay and many, many more. A horse will be joining us. I can't think of all the names off the top of my head, but there will be plenty of people. It's going to be a very good show. And obviously me and Laura will be there through the duration. I will also be back on Sunday for my Sunday night gaming stream. And that will be PUBG this week with the Patriot. And he is a very, very talented artist. He's a committed Christian. He's a committed nationalist. And we will be introducing him to the wider community on Sunday night, having a bit of political chat, banter with some gaming. So please join me then as well. It has been a wonderful show. I've really enjoyed it tonight. Thank you to Endeavor. Thank you to No White Guilt. Thank you to all those who donated so very generously. It means an awful lot to me. It allows me to carry on working full time for this movement. But most of all, thank you so much to everybody who's been here tonight. We've had about 1,400 watching on DLive, and even without the video play on Radio Albion, we've had over 1,000 watching there too, or listening there too. So strong numbers for the in between Christmas and New Year's doldrums. We often see a huge dip at this time of the year, but not too bad this year. So I look forward to seeing you on New Year's Day. Have a great New Year's. Look after yourself. Love to you all. This community is amazing. Stay safe, and I'll see you soon. Well, actually, hopefully I'll see you in about 10 minutes with James Goddard. See you then, guys. Look after yourselves.